I do what I was born to do. This is Dr. Herbert L. Varley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. I do what I was born to do. Now, I don't know how brilliant you are, but I certainly sometimes wonder about myself when I, what was I born to do? What was I born to do? What were you born to do? Have you any idea? Mm-hmm. Do you think Mozart knew what he was born to do? He sure did it, though, didn't he? You think any of the other greats of the world knew what they were born to do? Do you think that people who became the president of the United States knew when they were little children they were going to be president? I mean, a lot of kids say they'd like to be president, you know, but they say that, you know, not really knowing what it means. And as I look at the presidency, and I look at the things that they go through, I think to myself, they must have the greatest egos in the world, because without an ego like they have, they could not put up with the guff they have to put up with in being a president or being an official. I mean, they must be born to that. Because that is not an easy task. That's not an easy task. When the president does something right, everybody says he's wonderful. When the president does something wrong, everybody says he is absolutely terrible. And yet, if an ordinary person were to do something right or something wrong, it would not be of such gigantic proportions, you know. And so therefore, it wouldn't be thought of as quite a major tragedy or a blessing, whichever it may have been. Well, let's get back to I do what I was born to do. And let's forget about being president. Let's forget about being Mozart. Let's forget about being some prominent person or just an ordinary person. Let's forget about that. Forget about being an ordinary person who is part of the national or international average. You know what the word average means? That means of a similar area of whatever you are. Average. You're average. You're not above average. You're not below average. You're just average. The majority of the people of the world are average. That's where the word average comes from. So if you think of 100 people, well, say 80% would be average. 80%, yep. And then there's another 20%. Well, 5% or maybe 2% are top, and the rest are bottom. So of the last 20%, there's about 18% that are on the bottom and 2% on the top. Now, of the outstanding people you hear about in the world, there's only 2%. There's only a small percentage that are top, top, top. You might even say our legislators are top. No, they're not. They're average. Top legislators are rare. Anybody can be a legislator. Anyone can be a jolly fellow, well met, and be put into office. But to do something significant while you're in office, to be a leader, I guess that would be the point. To be a leader, every legislator is not a leader. He's outstanding. He is chosen by his people. But think about it. You have a state, let's say, with 100 people in it. How many people want to run for the government in the state? How many people want to bother with running the government of the state? 2 or 3 people out of 100. You know? And those are the people who get it. Other people don't want that job. If I were the legislator, I would do this. If I were the governor, I would do this. You want to be governor? No, 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 no. You get a nice salary. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're on your toes all the time and everybody's picking. Would you like to be a movie star? Oh, a movie star. How wonderful. But you have no private life. You may be an exquisite actor. You may be a wonderful person, but if you have some little personal faults in your life, you become target for public arrows because you're terrible. If you were an ordinary person, wouldn't think a thing about it. The minute you become a prominent person, then every little thing that you do, every little mole that you have on your face or your body, everybody knows about, you know. Every little marriage that you go through, everybody knows about it. The man on the street, he may have a dozen marriages, maybe more, and you have no idea, and you don't even care. But when Scarlett O'Hara, when Liz Taylor or somebody like that has a lot of husbands and wives, my goodness, the news, the photo magazines, the movie magazines are just filled with that stuff. They love to talk about it. But hey, those people in their averageness doing those things are taken to task. But the average person doing those things is never taken to task. Now, our question still comes back to, I do what I was born to do. Well, what were you born to do? Without getting all hot and bothered about it, what were you born to do? You were born to live. Hey, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, you were born to live. You weren't born to die. Well, you might be born to die too. Depends on how you live. But basically, let's leave that part alone. You're born to live. Now, are you born to have diseases? No. Are you born to have unhappiness in your life? No. Are you born to have limitation, lack in any way in your life? No. Are you born to have anything that is contrary to what you would call your highest good? No. Okay, well then, that sounds pretty good. That sounds pretty good. Now, where does this other stuff come in? This other stuff comes in when we turn off the faucet. Now, over at Brian's house, Brian's our handyman, and his wife called this morning as we were having breakfast and said, my husband home. The propane truck drove over our pipeline and broke our pipeline, and I got water screaming all over the yard and none in the house, and what am I going to do? And so Brian, who had just fixed the water pipe at our property, because the he said it was a land shift, you know, like an earthquake land shift, that it shifted and it just pulled apart the coupling, that it wasn't broken or anything, it just pulled apart. So apparently there'll be a lot of that water pipe and other pipes that need attention occasionally. So he went home to take care of it. Now, what was Brian born to do? Brian is our handyman. He's a nice guy. He has no great aspirations for himself to do anything. He has no intention of being great. He just is enjoying being himself, doing the things that are fun to do. And if he doesn't know how to do it, he says, I'll learn it at your expense. And hey, that's okay. He learns it at our expense, and then he can do it the next time at the same salary we're paying him now. But we're paying him a good salary. And not salary, we're paying him, he is an independent contractor, so we're paying him his fee. And he does good things, and we like him. And because of that, he's doing his own thing. And because of that, if his wife calls, he can go home. He doesn't feel that he's cheating or doing anything bad, because he's getting it by the hour, and he'll not ask for payment while he goes home and come back, but he will do whatever has to be done. He's what was he born to do? Now, you and I, we look at Brian, and we say he's a very fine young man. He's built like a wrestler, not a wrestler, yeah, like a wrestler. Big, burly, you know, strong, not fat. He just built really powerful. And he can lift all sorts of crazy things, you know. And I went to town yesterday to buy some doors for our buildings here. And I went into Lowe's over by IKEA's. And so I went in there and I saw these doors, and I saw many different kinds, and the doors I wanted were solid core doors. They had windows in them. Well, each door weighed about 180, 200 pounds. They were very heavy, very solid. And so here I am alone, and I have to push those doors onto the cart somehow. Now, I could go up front and get the clerk to come back and put it on, but they're a 97-pound weakling. And I thought, okay, how do I put the doors on? I know. I will just take them and lift them on, which is impossible. And everybody else would lay them down, but I stood them up. So I had the stand-up, and I thought, I'll just lift them and slide them right onto the cart. But now, if I put the cart over here, then I got to take them all the way to it. If I put the cart halfway across the aisle here, pushing against the other side, I just slide the door to it, up and in. So all four doors went in as though they were just pieces of straw, you know. And then there's the big steps that go up into the attic. And that is a heavy box. And they had a line in front of it saying, you know, don't touch these things behind here, because they are damaged. The front ones were damaged. So I had to slide the big front ones out of the way. And now I could have looked at it and said, oh, that's so heavy. I mean, here I am pushing 100, you know. Oh, that's so heavy. But I just slid them right out, slid them right out. I wasn't about to put them back. And I chose from the back row one that had not been damaged by the forklift or anything. And then I slid it forward. And then I had to put it in an ungainly position. So I went to the counter where there were three men, two burly men, you know, strong and hardy, one Slim Jim. And I said, would someone give me a hand? So the Slim Jim got up. And I said, do you think you can handle this? And he says, oh, sure. So he says, give me a hand. So I had to lift one end of the box and he the other, and lift it up high on top of the cart, leaning it against the doors. And then I said, do you think that'll stay there? He said, well, if you hold it, it will. I said, what's the shortcut to the exit? He says, down this aisle and that way. So I went down there, and it stayed on because I put it there. And so then I paid all the things and got out the door, and the man says, go get your truck. And so I brought the truck up to the front entrance there. And he says, just a minute, I'll call someone to give me a hand to put these on the truck for you. And here, I loaded them all myself. And this big, busted guy, he's going to get somebody to give him a hand. Wise fellow. So he went in, and he's also handling the cash register. And he had to stop helping me occasionally to take care of the cash register. So he helped. And nobody else came. He says, there's nobody around. He says, I don't know where they all disappear to. Whenever a job is here, they disappear, you know. So he says, I want to put these on like that. I said, well, why don't you let me handle one side and you handle the other, and we'll slide them in place. He says, you? And I said, give it a try. So you got big sheets of plastic and to roll between the doors so you wouldn't scratch them. And I feather lifted my end, and he struggle lifted his side. And he says, you make this look so easy. And I said, I make it look easy because that's the way I feel about it. I'm not going to make things look hard for me. And so he says, well, how do you do that? And I said, just pick it up with your fingertips, not with your muscles and hands as though you got to really carry the weight, but just with your fingertip. I said, you only got half the door anyhow. And so he did this, and he says, hey, that's cool, that works. You know? And so we put all four doors on, and he said, no, we got to take that top door off. We got to turn it around so that the other box won't be lying on top of the window. I said, thank you. So we turned it around, picked it up again, so that's five doors, you know. And so then we put the ladder to go up into the attic that's all folded up in a box in on it. And then he put plastic over that. He said it might rain on the way up. Beautiful, clear blue sky, and it might rain. But I thought that was very nice of him, you know. So he put this plastic on there, and then he tied it on. And he tied it on nicely, but being penurious, he didn't take enough string for the last one. And it was very short tie. The other one was perfect. He did it fine. I said, man, you do that like a master. He said, I do it enough times here. I have to. And so he got the other one on. And then I had a dozen more stops to make. And I made the other stops. And every time I started to take off, the wind opened up the plastics behind me and made a big balloon, almost as big as the vehicle up in the sky. And okay, no problem. You know, and I just drove along. Everybody looked at me, my gosh, you got a big load on it. Until the wind stopped, and then it went down again. But it was okay, no big problem. But I do what I was born to do. I was born to be me, to be a happy person, to be a person who finds nothing too difficult, nothing too easy, everything just right. You know, like Goldilocks, you know, no, that was not completely, Big Bear, Three Bears, and who was it who went to the Three Bears' house? Was that Goldilocks? Maybe so. And so she went to the Three Bears' house, and she tried Mama Bear's porridge. Baby Bear's wasn't Baby Bear's that was just right? Baby Bear's was just right. Mama, Papa's porridge was too hot, Mama's was too cold, and Baby Bear's porridge was just right. And so she ate it all up. And then she went upstairs to sleep in Mama Bear's and Papa Bear's bed, and it's all imperfect, but Baby Bear's was just right. And you see, this is how my whole life is. It's just right. Everything is in total harmony. You say, well, how come sometimes you have difficulties? Just to show me everything is in total harmony. I do everything right. Now, I do what I was born to do. A young man called today, and he said he was very much in love with a young lady. And I said, wonderful. And he said, but the young lady feels that we're not perfect for each other, but she still loves me very much, but, you know, we have differences. And I said, that's beautiful. That will make your marriage spicy and charming. I said, but don't let the difficulties limit you. And so then he said, well, now, what am I going to do? And then I read a story by Catherine Ponder in one of the Filipino articles, and so I rewrote the article with him in mind. And I said, if a husband has a wife who is unkind to him sometimes because she looks at something he does and sees it less than perfect, he should just see her perfect. He should see her doing everything, doing what she was born to do, to be a beautiful, lovely, sensitive lady. And then I went on in several other areas about the article that Catherine Ponder had written, and she referred to this man and what he had experienced with his business. And I just changed it to husband-wife. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing. So this man in his business had been able to completely change his attitude about people who were not happy with him. One day they were happy and one day they were not. He could completely change his attitude about them in himself and see the difference in the other people. Not that he made a difference. It was the attitude in himself that he changed, and so therefore, as he looked out and he saw them doing whatever it was right for them to do, and he was untouched by it. You know, a lot of times we think that we're the ruler of the world, that we're the guidepost of the world, we're the judger of the world, and because of that, we have problems. Whereas if we would just keep our nose in our own business, we wouldn't have so much to take care of. I'm raising a little golden retriever puppy right now. He's 9 weeks old. And the books say a lot about it, which is very good psychology. And it says, do not give the puppy more territory than he can handle. If you give the puppy the whole house, he'll rip up the whole house. If you give him half the house, he'll rip up half the house. If you give him basically just his house and a little area out in front, he will learn to respect it very quickly, because that's his home and he doesn't want to mess up in his home. He wants it nice and he'll respect it. And I thought, gee, we're like that. We're like that. We think that the world is our oyster. We think that we can go anywhere in the world and that we can burn trash, for instance, and send pollutants into the atmosphere here. And it won't matter because it'll blow away. It'll go over San Diego or go over the ocean. It'll go over someplace else and it won't bother us. Well, you see, when we live in our little world, we won't do that. Because we'll think our little world is the whole world. And we will not pollute our whole world. We will take care of it. But when we begin to think in the broader scope of the burned ashes going out over the ocean and not hurting anything, what are they doing? They're hurting the ocean. When all of the pollutants that we would know about are in the ocean, we'd be amazed. And not too many years ago, it wasn't true. Not too many years ago. But we're polluting the ocean, and one day we'll have a cesspool out there in the ocean instead of having a beautiful place where the fresh water and the rain comes from. When the rain comes after evaporation from the ocean, if it brings along any of the pollutants, we'll have a very rich, fertile land because all that pollutant will enrich the land. But that doesn't quite work that way, does it? What kind of water lifts up off the ocean? The evaporation. Just pure, free and clear water, the good stuff. And then the pollutants just remain there. Why does the Great Salt Lake become Great Salt Lake? Because the pure water is evaporated from it, and it leaves the pollutants behind, it leaves the salts, it leaves the minerals, it leaves everything else behind. But what was I born to do? I was born to be one place. Remember this now. I was born to be one place and one place only. In me. I was born to be in me. I was not born to be in anybody else. I was not born to be master of anyone else. I was not born to tell anyone else how to live their life, or anyone else how to improve themselves. I was not born to make somebody else's life richer and fuller and more wonderful. I may end up doing that because of my very nature, but that's not what I was born for. I was born to be me and to love me. Was I born not to love me?
No.
No. I was born to love me. Was I born to do all the nice things I can for myself?
Of course.
Am I supposed to polish other people's shoes?
No.
Am I supposed to try to do for others first before I do for myself?
No.
Am I supposed to be obsequious? Good word, isn't it? Am I supposed to be a milquetoast? Am I supposed to be lesser than anybody else? No. So if these things are really true, and I am supposed to put them myself as number one, why don't I do it?
You do.
All right, you say I do, and that's true. However, the world, as it is going through this experience, why doesn't each being in the world put themselves number one? Just imagine, if you had a school room filled with students who each believed they were number one, each believed that they were fantastic, glorious, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Each believed that. Would it be a hellish room to be in?
No.
Not at all. Would there be competition?
No.
Not at all. Would there be a love for everyone in the room?
Yes.
Because everyone loves themselves and they don't know how to do anything but to love their creation. So, would that teacher have a tough job?
No.
Only if the teacher didn't believe in itself. If the teacher knew why it is there. Now, why is, and please don't answer me, but why is the teacher in the classroom at all? The teacher is a guide to help each student reveal, now it's not a strange word, reveal all that is already within them. The teacher is not there to make them memorize and learn things and get something new out of life. The teacher is there to teach them how to think, how to use their brains, how to listen within for all the knowledge that existed before the wheel was ever invented. You understand? And they don't have to reinvent the wheel, but they know all those things. They know all those principles. And I shouldn't say they, we. We know all those things and all the principles. The teacher is there to help each student reveal all that is within them. Now, if each teacher were to handle her or his class in that way, what a beautiful group of people they would be creating. What a beautiful group of teachers. They would know why they were born. And they're born to be themselves and have fun being themselves. And to be yourself is not meaning that you may go and do hurtful things to other people, that you may go and take something that doesn't belong to you. To be yourself merely means that whoever you are, divine or devil, that you will live in the world as either divine or devil. As divine, you will listen within yourself and you will call out all your own inner genius. As a devil, you will sit on other people's dreams and not be really effective yourself. So be yourself and have fun. That's what I was born to do. That's what you were born to do. And that's where you're going to find your fulfillment, is in being yourself and having fun. That's what life's all about. I do what I was born to do, and I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, no, I'm supposed to say, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. And that's true.